be unto you. We acknowledge the mercy and blessing of Allah. We bear witness that there is none worthy of worship except Allah, that is God alone. And we bear witness that Muhammad, to whom the Quran was revealed for the good of all people, of the believers, all people, is his servant and his messenger. We pray the peace and the blessings of Allah be upon him and upon his descendants, his companions, the righteous, and upon us. Be peace. Ameen. We thank Allah for the opportunity to be here in Newark, New Jersey, at this facility with the Muslims of the area. And we hope that his blessings remain on us always. We seek him for the results that we desire, and we aim to satisfy his will, his purpose, to please him. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. That is in the name of God, the gracious, the compassionate. We attend now the concerns of this address. Recently, some influential leaders attended a quiet meeting on Chicago's South Side. My presence made me aware of an unnecessary distance between Muslim efforts and Christian efforts in the neighborhood and in the city. Our community is our life. It is our shared life. Our community is also our interest, our shared interest. We have in our hearts and our purpose the good of our community, the good of our Muslim community. But we also share the responsibility with non-Muslims for the whole space, area, town or city that we share, that we live in together. For Muslims, most important perception of life is community. There's no hope for the individual without that existing, that is community. Our social scientists those who study the history of human societies, the needs of the individual in human society, have made it known to us that the simple functions of a human being, such as speech, communication, would not be possible without that person being a member of a community. We learn to speak the language because we are a member of a community. In the community of our family, our mother, our sisters, our brothers, relatives, close relatives, associates, we learn to function as a human being. It has been documented that where certain human beings have been deprived of an opportunity to grow up, to develop in a human community, they did not reach that human plane of life and expression. They were found without speech, without human speech, and without human posture, without human sensitivities. So community is for us the most important perception. We are to perceive ourselves, to see ourselves, first of all, as a community. And Allah Most High says to us in His holy book, you are the best community brought out for the good of all people. So at this point, I would like to also make it clear that our religion, like Christianity and certain other universal persuasions, is a declaration for the whole world. It is a global declaration. We must think then of ourselves first of all as people with a share of this globe, born on this planet with a share of this globe. And Allah, our Lord, the same Lord who revealed to Moses, revealed to Abraham before Moses, and who revealed to Jesus, peace be upon all the prophets, the same Lord that revealed the Quran, made it possible for us to come into this religion, chose us to be Muslim, the same Lord intended that we have a global mission, if I may use that term, a global mission. And it is this recognition of our global mission that puts us in the best situation to accomplish things at hand. I believe that people are small because their vision of themselves is small. Once people come into the proper vision of themselves, they have an influence and a motivating force in their life to enable them to meet any task they may come into or encounter in their private or local situations. We perform poorly at home because we do not properly see ourselves. We do not properly see our role in the creation of God. Muslims are required to keep the global life in focus. We cannot view our situation without viewing the whole situation for man. No man is an island, we have heard. No community can exist in isolation from the rest of the world, we have heard. And we must accept that as Muslims. that no man is an island and no community can exist separated from the rest of the world. As population has increased, technology advanced, we have been forced into a one-room world. The world has become one room. You may live in China and another man in America, but technology and the increased population and increased problems for increased population have brought all of our concerns to us on television. We look at television and we are forced to hear what other people are saying. We are forced to view their situations. We are forced to hear their cries and to understand or to know their pains. And this increases the burden of responsibility on the citizens. Who share that kind of mortal situation. It is burdensome to get bad news from all of our relatives, especially when you are part of a very big family. If you're part of a very big family, occasionally and sometimes too often you'll be getting bad news. And it puts a burden on us. But we are able to survive it. We are able to live it, live through it. Now we are forced, because of the progress of the world, technology, etc., we are forced now to receive the news of the whole world. If there's an earthquake, and recently there was one in South America, and it takes thousands of lives, we're forced to hear that. We are forced to know about that. We are forced to look at the babies that are destroyed. It puts a great burden on sensitive human beings. But we are prepared for that. God intended that we share that great burden. He intended that we be members of a global world, a global society. And He has said to us in His holy book, "Cannot you see that the earth, the sky, the creation was once one whole and God caused it to be separated?" So Allah is not telling us the world is separated, sky is separated from earth. Planets are separated from each other. The masses are separated from leaders. Continents and towns are separated from each other. That's not what Allah is telling us here. Allah is telling us that the essential character of His creation is unity. That He made one creation. And no matter how much division we see, how great the separations are, the important understanding to come to is that there is a unity, there is a wholeness, there is a sameness. And it will obligate us and force us to register that reality, that the world is one and man is one. After we understand that truth about our situation, our condition and circumstances here on this globe, then we can start to address problems near to us. Now, we know the natural way for man to progress is to begin with himself and go out to others. But we reach a point in the growth of man that it is not best to come to self and then go out to others. It is best to go out to others and then come to self. For there is no situation more important in determining your situation, in influencing your situation, than the immediate situation for you or the immediate things in your immediate situation. Then you will have no difficulty looking at yourself and then looking at your situation. But when things outside of you, outside of your immediate situation, begin to have more influence upon you and your situation than anything in your immediate situation, then it's best to look out there and then look in here. And I believe that we are failing to make the progress that we feel in our hearts and souls that we are capable of making. I'm talking about what you call poor folks, disadvantaged folks, underclass, whatever term we want to use. I'm not talking about the black man right now. I'm talking about people in bad situations. All right? Yes. So I think the reason why we fail to realize the effectiveness that we feel in our hearts and souls, that we can realize, is that we're approaching the problem in the way that man approached the problem when he was first put in the earth. See, Adam had nothing to look at but himself. So Adam just looked at himself until God put him to sleep. And he woke up. When he woke up, there was more around him than himself. So he began to busy himself with something outside of himself. We make the big mistake of thinking that the way to solve a problem is to go directly to the problem. That's not always the case. Because sometimes it is necessary for you to go away from the problem to see the problem. For a long time we've been in the United States, and we didn't know we had all the problems we have now and that we're aware of. I remember the kinds of complaints we used to make when I was a boy. Oh, they are nothing compared to the complaints we make now. And we were still here, we were still people, we were still very intelligent. In fact, we might have had more intelligence than we have now. But we were just not favored to see a bigger situation. We have family concerns. We have employment concerns, work concerns. We have many concerns. And sometimes we think that the way to improve our life or to improve the situation is to go directly to the concern. We know that family life is not in good repair, not only for African Americans, but for most people in the United States, and perhaps in the whole Western society, whole Western world. And it's spreading on to the East, to the third world. Maybe we would be better off if we said, now maybe it's time to rethink everything. Maybe it's time to register what's happening outside of our situation. And if we start to do that, I believe we'll soon be better prepared to handle the problems in our immediate situation, whether it's the home, the family, or the home, the neighborhood, the job, or whatever. Our concern is respect and appreciation for property. We know that the neglect in our lives for property keeps us down. It's one of the factors keeping us down. If we had a better appreciation for property, a better respect for property, we know that the poor would be in better situation, would be better off. But something that's something so far away from our awareness, something that's abstract as beauty for many of us, beauty, may be the cause for the rest of our problems. Too many of us don't appreciate beauty anymore. And when you lose an appreciation for beauty, you lose respect for quality life. Because it is that sensitivity in us, that appreciation for beauty, that made us want to have quality life. We didn't know in the very early stages of man's civilization, the development of his civilization, we didn't know that it's ugly not to have enough calcium. It's ugly not to have enough potassium. What I mean by that, it's bad not to have enough of those things. But we knew ugliness and beauty. We knew ugliness and beauty. And beauty made us want to see health in a person. Beauty made us want to see kindness in people. See, that's ugly behavior. That's what the folks used to say. That's ugly behavior. So if we don't have appreciation for beauty, we lose appreciation for the quality of life. We have all this effort to bring back the quality of life. Maybe the real problems are not right there where we are seeing them. Maybe, as I said, we need to rethink the whole matter again. We need to get a view of ourselves in the total creation again. We need to see our role in the total creation again. We need to see our place in this external world again. We need to know ourselves in the context of the universe again. We need to look outside of ourselves again to see what we are all about in our little sphere of activity. And when we do that, we can think better. Doing that will make us think better. We will be more effective. We will begin to appreciate progressional life. We will begin to appreciate the wholeness of life. We will begin to appreciate methodical life. Because when we look out there beyond, we may be all messed up here in our private situation, but if we'll take a look at the whole universe, we're going to see order, discipline, laws, methods, and a bigger thing than what we see in our small selves. And that will turn us on. That will give us life again. That will excite our intellect again. That will raise the dead. Yes, that will raise the dead. You got your life from a good situation in material existence. Huh? Yes, you put a dead seed in dead earth and leave it in the dead environment, and the right kind of things happen, and there's life from the dead. We think we have to go out of space, go out in space and suspend ourselves up there in our own thoughts to raise the dead. No, the dead will be only mummified up there. The dead is raised down here. Well, I don't know.
See, when you lose appreciation for simple things like beauty, your pleasures become ugly. And that's another reason why the low performers don't get out of their rut. It's because they don't have the healthy appreciation for beauty, and their amusement have become ugly. And they seek amusement just for quick gratification. Men used to appreciate music, not for its immediate gratification only. In fact, they weren't so much into its immediate reward. They appreciated music because they saw it as something that improved the spirit of man. They saw it as part of the beauty of God, part of the beauty of the things that he made possible in creating this world. They saw it as something that was happening not only with them, they were trying to get in tune with something bigger than themselves and their small instrument. They enjoyed the music as part of the music of a universe, as part of the music of a bigger world than their own. And because of that, they valued and treasured the music. Look what our performers started to do just a few years ago. What was it, about 15, 20 years ago? They would play and excite their fans and then drive their fans to a frenzy by breaking up their instruments. They would take the guitar and bang and break it all up. Break up their instruments. And isn't that what many of us are doing? When we are enjoying our life, we're breaking up our instrument. We can't get enough pleasure out of just life, simple life. So we say, oh, let me break up my instrument. So we carry the pleasure to a perverted end. And we become sick and crazy. We abuse ourselves. And we come back home and we're not ready to go to work Monday. We're in no situation, we're in no condition to go to work Monday. The mother is asking the father for something and the father can't even hear it. He's in no situation to listen to the concerns of the household. The child is going to destruction and the father has no patience to even listen to the problem of that situation because he's just been wiped out by the fun that he had last night. Yeah, that's destroying your instrument, isn't it? Enjoying it and destroying it. And getting excitement while you're doing that. So we need to come back to natural life. And Allah has made us more aware of the importance of natural life. I was at a meeting, a tribute to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, my late father, whose positive works are monumental. I was at that tribute, and I know many people say, why did he go there? Well, there was a way for me to go, and a time for me to go, and a condition for me to go, and the occasion was worth me going. I was there. And felt it my duty. Now, there on the platform at that tribute was an Indian, an American Indian. And he had his wife with him and a couple other Indian brothers, are members of his order. And I looked at them and thought about the situation. And I said to myself, when people can come together for a common purpose, common cause, and see something bigger than themselves calling themselves, requiring their time, their attention, their energies, they're in a good situation. But when they can't do that, they're in a bad situation. They're in a bad situation. Now, I'd like to go a little deeper in the water now. I find also that there are concerns of identity and power, or authority, or command, identity and command. Working in human lives. And they aid each other. As we progress in our understanding of our identity, it puts us in a situation to progress also in our ability to take charge, to command our life, to command our situation. These two concerns operate as codependence. We have been occupied as a people by the need to identify ourselves. We have called ourselves by the names that we were given over here in this part of the world, separated from ancestors and past history. We have identified ourselves with their names, with the names we were given, Negro, colored people. And with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we began to call ourselves black people. Many of us don't know that it was with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that we began to call ourselves black people. Before him, we went by other names, Negro, colored people, Afro-Americans. But it wasn't until the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's leadership that we came to call ourselves black and black people. Whether we buy that or not, because someone will tell me, Negro means black. But when you're calling yourself something by a name you don't know, then it doesn't matter. And most of us didn't know Negro meant black. You're forced to study Spanish now. That's how come you know Negro means black. But we will, I'm sure, all acknowledge that identity is a great burden on African-American people. It's so much of a burden that many of us have given up on it. Say, well, I'm not going to bother about that identity no more. And maybe that's the best thing to do. Who knows? Maybe if we start living, we will grow into an identity that will not give us a problem. But for now, we have to think about identity, because I'm thinking about identity not only in that frame of reference, but I'm thinking of identity now in the universal frame of reference. We need to identify ourselves in the universal frame of reference. And when you identify yourself in the universal frame of reference, you're going to come up with an identity that all men share. And that's the first identity. That's the first identity. That's the best identity. Coming into that identity will give you a sense of responsibility that you never had before, unless you've already come into that kind of identity. Coming into that identity will give you a sense of security you've never had before, unless you've come into that kind of identity. It will give you a sense of authority, purpose and authority that you've never had before, unless you've come into that kind of identity. Yes, simple philosophical things like this can be the answer to no jobs, poor families, high death rate, too many children, born to children, etc. Yes, this is the kind of thinking we need to do. We need to go back, get back away from welfare. Step back, get back away from welfare. Get back of this obsession with the white man. Get back from that. Stop seeing the white man as so important in your life, in your affairs, in your future. Step away from it all and start rethinking. Just think the whole life again. All of us have been created with the potential, with intelligence for that. All of us have a natural urge to do that. If you will just put down the wine bottle for a minute. And I don't mean the wine bottle you buy at the store. The wine bottle you buy with the hand of confusion. And you select something that's bad for yourself, and you turn down something that's good for yourself because you don't have anything to select with but the hand of confusion. Yes, if you can come to the identity that God intended for you, for God did not make you a Negro first. God did not make you a black man first. God first made you a universal man. And time and circumstances and conditions made you a Negro and made you a black man. Perhaps some of you have seen the show that they have, the program. Very interesting program. Very interesting program, especially for us Muslims and nationalists and other people that like to think the past and present and the future. You know, we like to think in three dimensions. Yes, a program by Ali Mesroi. The Africans, showing on public television. And the college students can get credit for the program. All they have to do is call the college that is advertised at the end of the program, and they can get credits, college credits. This man, he says, who told us, or who established that Islam is not an African religion? And he went on to say that 5 million years ago, something happened in the geological crust or something of the earth and caused a small separation that separates Arabia from Africa. And he said, but that didn't really make Africa and Arabia two different places. Say, what did it was European power. He says European power gave its map to Africa and to Arabia. We know that Prophet Muhammad, when he was persecuted in Mecca, he went to Ethiopia. He didn't go himself, but he sent some of his followers.
to Ethiopia to get help, to get protection. We know that he was invited by the people of Medina, which is about 200 or so miles from Mecca, on the same peninsula, as we now understand it. Say, well, Arabia is a peninsula and Africa is a continent. Depends on how you look at it. Because that same program says Africa is the biggest island on the earth. It is surrounded by water. So it depends on how you're looking at it, right? And that wouldn't justify us not looking at this the way we're looking at it anyway, because the continent of India hangs down by itself, but yet it's Asia. Huh? The continent of India is much more separated from Asia, from the mass of Asia, then Arabia is separated from the mass of Africa. But they didn't choose to say India is not Asia, or not Asia, but they chose to say that Arabia is not Africa. If you know what has happened to us in our history, and not only to us, to Hispanics now, who are trying to get that due respect as citizens of America. If we know what has happened to us in the process of trying to get that due respect from America, from the people of America, how they have twisted truths to close the door on us, how they have falsified reality to close the door on us, how they have come up with false classifications to block our progress, then you should understand that the same mentality could remap the whole world to make us feel apart from each other when we're the same. Arabia is too close to Africa to not be our near relative. Too close. In fact, I believe I can jump from Arabia into Africa at certain points.
Help yourself.
Now, we can make this kind of progress with our thinking when our thinking is free. See, when your thinking is free, it gets wings like a bird. And it can soar up, it can go up in the air from the gravity of narrow-mindedness and take you to worlds unseen before and give you a bigger sense of God's purpose and God's creation. And you come back and look at the place where you just left, say, hell, this ain't big no more. I'll come to this task and do it in. Well, see, my critics, those who wish me dead, now they got power because they wished me dead so long they got me with a backache and a bad leg. So don't think they don't have power. They got a little power. Yeah, those who wish me out of the picture, wish that I go somewhere and just dry up or keep quiet, never be seen again. They wonder how come that man keeps an audience? How come he's still heard and paid some attention to in 1986? That we thought that that low-key, deadpan fellow would be out of the picture in about a year or two after the passing of his father. What keeps me in the picture? It's not my statue. I look pitiful. not my degrees, I have none. But the ones life have given me, I have no degrees. So what is it that keeps me? It is this freedom that I got. My Muslim thinking was too big for the family of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The more I found the Muslim thinking from the Muslim source, the Quran, my Muslim thinking got bigger and bigger. After a while, it got too big for the Savior's Day Convention. And I think I was as black as they come at one time in my life. I used to say it and believe it, that the black man is the originator, the owner, the maker, cream of the planet Earth, father of civilization, God of the universe. He knows every square inch of it. Yeah, I used to say that. I used to say that, and I used to believe it, and I used to feel good when I said that. Until I started trying to figure out the square inches of the rug that I wanted to put down on my floor.